The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to the Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, mission your mind.
He is Michael Coleman, the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Michael, how are you doing, brother? What's going on?
It's been a good week. But I'm glad we're at the end of it.
I hear you.
I'm a little nervous about Alabama and Georgia tomorrow, but I'm ever optimistic.
I think we're going to be fine. It's going to be the first weekend, too, of college football where we actually have some really, really good games.
So
we're going
to find out. Top to bottom, it's great matchups.
We do several shows, and I've got a friend of mine, Kip Kiefer, and he's like, no one's playing anybody. You haven't played them all. This is going to be the weekend where you can actually say, okay, we've played somebody. So it should be a great weekend of college football. Speaking of sports, and I'm glad you brought that up, something happened this past week. If you're an Auburn fan, and I've had a lot of Auburn fans reach out to me and ask me to talk about this, and there's no reason why we can't do that because Auburn is a business as well. But Bruce Pearl pulled the big switcheroo this past week. I'll say what it is. I'm sitting there getting ready for basketball season. I'm not necessarily an Auburn fan, but I do respect Bruce. I've met him numerous times. I've interviewed him a million times. I think he's a fantastic coach. I think he's a Hall of Fame guy. He's taken Auburn to two Final Fours. No one in a million years would have thought you could do that with Auburn basketball 10 years ago, not with the Jeff Leeville years and all that stuff. And he's done it. Now at the age of 65, out of nowhere, 3 weeks before exhibition play starts and the season's right around the corner and you're all fired up for Auburn basketball, he splits, and the new head coach is his son, Stephen Pearl, who's been on his staff for 10 or 11 years. I wasn't aware of that. Sorry, I didn't even know he had a son, Stephen Pearl. By looking at his face, I can definitely tell that he's from his loins. Like they look a lot alike. They're both very handsome gentlemen. But as a fan, I'm kind of like, I almost feel like I was walking down the aisle to marry somebody. And when I get up there and she pulls the veil up, it's her sister. And I'm like, who are you? Oh, I'm her sister. She decided, hey, listen, I'm as good as she is. And you know everything about her, but I'm the same thing. You're not getting, nothing's going to change. So just shut up and say I do. And I'm like, no. First of all, the Auburn job has gotten so much better. It was never a destination job. It's gotten so much better over the last 10 or 11 years since Bruce came in. And because of that, now you can demand to have a coaching search. You don't have to go get a guy and bring him in and build the program up. You can go and get a guy who's already situated, a guy who's already won a couple hundred basketball games and get a great guy. That's the first thing is, did they screw him out of it? So keep that in the back of your mind.
Okay.
Out of Reddit, a story that comes out this morning. A man's turned to the Reddit community for support following a dramatic family fallout that began when his father gave away the family business he had dedicated nearly two decades of his life to. 32-year-old explains in his post that after being passed over in favor of his brother-in-law, he cut off his family entirely and launched a rival business and now is thriving while his father's business crumbles. So the father's got a body shop, does all kinds of things for cars, and they work on mufflers and all that other stuff. And the kid has worked there from the years of 15 to 32. He's been there for 17 years working for his pop. And last week, his dad at the age of 60 comes out and says, listen, I'm going to hang it up. I'm going to retire. And I'm leaving the business to my daughter's husband. And the son's sitting there going, I've been working with you for 17 years. What the hell? Yeah. Had a conversation and finds out that the son's being cut $15,000 and is being demoted inside the shop. And so the kid gets pissed off, loses his brain. I don't know if he found an investor or not, but basically opened up a garage right across the street and now is kicking his old man's ass where it hurts the most. I want you to talk. It's a great post. It's a wonderful story. But talk about from the start to the finish. What I want to talk about in a roundabout way, we could put a bow on this is family businesses. Do you want to stay in the family business? Do you want to not stay in the family business? What happens when they ask you to stay in the family business, but you don't want to have anything to do with it? What if you want to be in the family business, but they don't want you to own it? Just talk about those dynamics briefly, and then we'll get into some specifics.
You know, sometimes when the father has preconceived notions, it may be hard to leave a history behind. Like we said, he may look at all of it and say, well, together, my daughter and son-in-law will probably be able to run this business. Now, what it appears to have happened is the kick in the teeth to the son appears to have motivated him to go out and, who knows, maybe he would have always been successful, or maybe he's like, I'm going to show my old man and I'm going to live that dynamic or you know, prove to him or whatever. There's so many different variables that belong in there. But I just know this, is that it is rare for you to do business, especially a business handover to a child, and it go completely smooth. Like, you agree on money, you agree on control, you agree on just all the dynamics, the personnel you're going to keep, the personnel you're going to get rid of. You know, you might have somebody who originated and said, I've had these people working for me for 30 years. And the guy and the son or daughter taking over goes, yeah, but they can't get on a computer anymore. And I need everybody to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that causes tension. Or there's just so many potential messy dynamics, not to mention, we tend to, if we're in a trust relationship with somebody, we're like, oh, we'll take care of the paperwork later. And then it goes south. Yep. And you don't have things properly documented, or the owner gave you a contract that you said, oh, I trust my dad or I trust my mom, and you don't take it to an attorney. And then there's something in there that later they want to take it back. I mean, and so I've seen family dynamics really be strained because of that. There's been a couple of occasions where I've seen it go very smoothly, but it's wrought with challenges.
You know, the first thing I thought of was, you were with your father in his company for 17 years. And again, we don't know the ins and outs of this. And normally when you read something like this Reddit thing, there's always a backstory, right?
So
we're going to pretend there probably is. But if you are working with your father, my dad was a newspaper distributor. I worked with him for 10 or 15 years. He used to give me 15 cents a hundred. You know, I used to sit there and stuff newspapers and stuff. I never wanted the business. He didn't want me to have the business because he wanted his son to do something better than what he was doing. He's like, you're not going to be driving a van all night and it happening. You're going to go off and do some great things. My dad, what he had to do, and I loved him for it. But if I was interested in taking his business over, at some point you'd have to have that conversation with your dad over a beer or dinner. Maybe in his 50s. Hey, Dad, what have you thought about retiring? I mean, obviously he's retiring at the age of 60, so the business is in good hands. I'm assuming that he's probably still going to be getting paid. The father is going to be getting some type of pension or something from the business. He'll set that up here. I'm going to give you the business, but you're still going to give me $3,000-$4,000 a month so I can live and I can retire. But you'd like to think that son should have had that conversation with his dad, say, hey, what do you think you're going to do with this? And is this something that perhaps I can look forward to taking on? Is that something I can prove to you that I can take this business on? Because it seems like it came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, the kid's like, after 17 years, he just assumed that he was going to be taking the family business. Maybe his dad's father gave him that business and he just assumed it was going to be coming down the line. The next thing you know, he's out in the blue. And again, God works in mysterious ways. It sounds like maybe he got a blessing in disguise, because it sounds like he went and took all of his customers and went across the street and took everything away and got back of them. Now, I'm not about spitefulness either. But you know what I mean? There's some things that could have been done.
Yeah, if I had a friend in that situation, my advice would be to them, you know, regardless of their age, if they think they are in line to receive the family business, they need to be proactive in planning that and then hearing what. So let's just say it's a father-son, and you go to the father and you say, hey, I want to have a conversation about what your plans are for the company and how that affects my future. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not greedy. That's wisdom. You're trying to at least have some sort of direction. And then when you talk to them about, okay, do you have retirement goals, or do you plan on working till you kill over, whatever it is? There's some people like that. And, you know, barring health emergencies or anything, and start seeing, get them. Sometimes you'll have to pull it out, because older people don't want to think about, hey, if I give up my job, what's my purpose in life anymore? You know, I spent 40 years building this business. So sometimes that can be a tough conversation. So sometimes you might have to set it and go, hey, I want to go ahead and hit this with you. I don't want to have the conversation now, but I want to have it in a couple of weeks. So, and these are the kind of things I want you to, if you would, be thinking about. So you kind of, you know, till the soil a little bit. But the bottom line is you have every right in the world to ask what they're thinking. So what I was talking about was, you know, you have every right to go and lay out what the future is and then decide for yourself what's in your best interest. You don't have an obligation. I know lots of times we feel pressure to take over maybe a family business, but if it's something you don't feel like you're gifted for, or that's not your skill set, or that's not where you see your future, if you have a passion for something else, you know, it's good to have that conversation in advance so that they can start looking at, well, you know, if I'm going to sell it or I'm going to give it to another member of the family, but you're conveying what your desires are. But it has to start with the conversation of the owner and mm-hmm. what their desires are. And then you have to match. You shouldn't assume anything. You need to match what your expectations and desires are and then make a decision. Yes, I'm going to wait in line until this person's ready, or I'm going to have to. Now, I will give you something very interesting that's a little tied into this. It's not exactly family. Somebody asked when I came back before I took over the food bank, when I was interviewing for the food bank, it was another nonprofit in town, and they had a leader who was set on retiring in 2 years and asked me to come be the COO, and they were going to retire in 2 years. And I said, well, what happens if you choose not to retire? If I come in under that agreement thinking I'm going to take over in 2 years and then you choose not to, then I'm kind of left in the lurch. And so I said, well, the only way I would consider that is if you pay me for 2 years and then at the end of that 2 years, whether you retire or don't retire, I get paid CEO salary.
There you go. Yeah.
And as a protection against that. So I was like from the son's perspective, you know, the business owner or whatever. And so again, there's all sorts of ways to resolve that. Best thing to do though is to sit down and begin to have that conversation.
Yeah. So I think this is really interesting. And again, it just sounds like I always have to go back and look at my father-son relationship, and I could talk to my dad about things. And again, my dad had his own business, and I didn't want to take over for him because it was a newspaper distributor, but it changed a lot over the course of the years he had it. It wasn't really his business anymore. He was kind of buying newspapers from the Cincinnati Inquirer and then selling them on his own. And so that's not really what I wanted to do. But talk a little bit about the situation you have where you have, say you have your tax preparer or you own a garage and you have a lot of different clients and you do want to pass it on to someone new, but you're trying to let your fan base know, if you will, or your P1s or your clientele. Hey, listen, there's nothing to worry about here. But you know, I'm going to be handing my business off to so-and-so. So for the last 30 years, and I just met with a good friend of mine, Chris Doris from State Farm. He did that with a lot of people in the insurance business do that with their father, sons. The Doris family's been in it forever. And so when you've been with someone for 35 years and all of a sudden you're being told, hey, listen, it's not going to be me anymore. It's going to be my son. Most of us would probably say, yeah, as long as the service is good, I'm all about it because it's a loyalty kind of thing, but you're dealing with someone different, someone new. Talk a little bit about what that means from the customer standpoint, because sometimes they kind of feel like lulled into, well, yeah, I've been with you for a long time, but I signed up with you, not your son, not your mother, not your daughter, not someone else taking the business over.
Yeah. You know, back in the day, if a grandfather started, let's say early 1900s started a business, you know, there just wasn't tons of innovation in the 1800s and coming up to the 1900s. So you might've had a family business that started back then. And so the father would take over and there wouldn't be drastic change, but now with technology and innovation, in order to compete, you have to stay up on those things. So change becomes the norm. So I'm very comfortable with that, always changing. But what happens to the people that you're serving, whether it's your customer or your clients in the nonprofit world, whatever it is, that dynamic can really shape them. So imagine if you've gone to the same barbershop the same week for 10 years, And now, and you, the barber knows you and knows exactly how you like your hair. You don't have to go through that. He knows exactly.
Great analogy. Yeah, great analogy.
He knows what cologne to put on you, what not to. He knows the subjects that you like to talk about. So there's this. Hey, this is my friend, and this is a social time, but a useful time. Well, the sun comes in. And maybe he's not extroverted. Maybe he's introverted. So he doesn't want to have a conversation and doesn't want a small talk. And he changes now. And so you have to register online to even get your, standing appointments.
Yeah.
All those comings. And they're like, man, this is not what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But, the son is actually doing what he has to do very likely just to be able to compete. But the customer then feels that bond is broken, and there's a whole psychological thought to that that business people need to consider, but it can't hold them captive. One of the things that when I got here 3 years ago, food bank ordering was we would have to get everything we got in and create like a menu almost and post it on the website, very manually intensive. And then people would download that, and then they would fax it or, they'd put what they wanted. They fax it, they'd email it, whatever. They called in over the phone. Well, we went to an online system ordering anyway that automated all of that. And you would not believe the wailing and gnashing of teeth that existed over that transition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I told them was, I said, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you a cheat sheet you put right. It's going to be very easy. You're going to love it once it becomes familiar. It's just change. Well, and the only way I've made, and I even had employees going, there's no way you're going to ever make them do it. And I said, listen, if we do the ramp up a couple months in advance, prepare them, teach them, coach them. Plus, we make it mandatory. We say, no, you can't send us an email order food anymore. No, you just can't do that. That avenue shut down. They will adjust. And so there was a huge time of adjustment. But once we got on the other side of it, now you never hear complaints because now this is the new norm and will be for the next 10 years until there's another change. And then they'll go through that same dynamic. So it's a lot of it is we get comfortable with our processes. We get in our habits. I eat at this place at this time. I know who the waitress is. I can ask her about our kids. I don't want a new waitress. I don't want a new barber. I don't want a new grocery store to have to go to. I don't want all that because I know my world is ordered. And so that is a very serious variable that exists is how are my customers going to respond to sometimes even subtle changes within a business. But the dynamic is change is going to happen. So you take it back to the Auburn situation. The kids, they came to Auburn, not because I think, is his name Steve?
Stephen Pearl. Yeah.
Stephen. Mm-hmm. Now, he may have recruited some, and so there may be one or two that have a close relationship with him. Basketball staffs typically in college are not that big. But they came because of what Bruce Pearl has built and the confidence they have in him. Now, what you may see is, as a result of this changeover, you may see people enter the transfer portal and say, I didn't come, just like when Nick Saban left.
Yeah, by the way, Bruce is still going to be on staff. In some capacity. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but yeah.
Yeah. So, that dynamic, but he's ultimately going to have to prove his own worth. He's going to have to be able to produce results. I mean, the Auburn crowd will give him a year, maybe two, but if you're not in Sweet 16s now, I mean, that's the standard at Alabama and Auburn. It's Sweet 16 or bust.
I mean, if you're a hairdresser or a hair place or bartender or whatever, and you're changing business, I mean, that's your business. That's fine. I could take my business elsewhere if it doesn't work out. What with this thing though, particularly when you're talking about the fervor and the spirit of what fanatics and fanaticism is and sports is like, first of all, the timing really sucks. It's like 2 or 3 weeks before the
end. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And obviously it's going to a family member, so there's no coaching search. And he obviously he has elevated the program to the point now where you really could probably go out and get whoever you want. And obviously Auburn expects to have a winning basketball team every year. So I could see that, but I really feel like the fan base was kind of hoodwinked and all that. I guess the question is,
you know, I still think there's some sort of potential Senate bid. And maybe we can talk about that next week or something. But I'm an Alabama fan, but I firmly believed when they got Bruce Pearl, because he was at Tennessee. You remember he got dismissed for a recruiting violation. But I firmly believe in who he is as a coach. I think he's a quality person. He's begun to speak out about the war in Gaza.
Yeah.
Between Israel because of his Jewish background. And he's like Tupperville, that he's got name recognition and a lot of people. I wouldn't be surprised if he threw his hat in the ring.
I think you're absolutely right. Bruce Pearl and Tommy Tupperville are the same state running, for goodness gracious. That would be something else. No, listen, you can say what you want about Tommy. I like Tommy much more as a coach. I think right now he's just an ass kisser, but that's just me. he doesn't have any of his own ideas, and that's fine. He follows the tab line, but Bruce is one of those guys where he walks into a room now and you just feel it. I mean, it's not because he's loud or boisterous, or whatever. He just has that energy that is really, really infectious. You can feel it.
Very, very charismatic.
Very charismatic. So great stuff. InfoTonyCurryRadio.net. InfoTonyCurryRadio.net. If you got any email questions on that, please feel free. Go back and listen to all of our shows. Of course, this show airs 5 days a week. Very, very proud of it. One of our longest lasting shows here on Tony Curry Radio. And by the way, we went to over, 150,000 listeners a month. I think we went over last month. So we just continue to grow. We got new shows coming up in December, January. So just some great stuff. We continue to envelop the podcasting world and continue to grow. And we'll get into Bite by Bite up next right here on Tony Curry Radio. Thank you, sir.
All right. Enjoyed it.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.